The other day, I read a line in a short story by Lohr Siegel. It went, "My idea of hell is listening to a child recount the plot of a story." Now think about this for a minute. Have you ever listened to a small child try to tell you a story? Story of a book they've read or been read to at school or a movie they've seen, and you know how they can't quite get it right and they keep saying, "No, this happened, no, that happened, the other thing happened," and at the end you smile and you nod and you realize you have no idea what the story was about that they just told you, but you must get them to stop telling it. That's because children don't yet have a sense of the arc of a story and how it's supposed to work. And in fact, this was reinforced and made poignant the other day in a story in the New York Times about stories. It was called "This Is Your Life and How You Tell It." Several researchers have realized that the story that people tell themselves about who they are and why they got that way is a powerful reflection of the level of their mental health. Generous, civic-minded adults from diverse backgrounds tell life stories with similar and telling features, studies find. So likewise do people who have overcome mental distress through psychotherapy. In other words, if you look at people from different cultures who do well, they tell the stories of their lives with certain stable traits, culture to culture. Younger kids see themselves in terms of broad, stable, fixed characteristics. "I like baseball, but not soccer," said Kate McLean, a psychologist at the University of Toronto. This meaning-making capability to talk about growth, to explain what something says about who I am, that doesn't develop until you start to reach adolescence. In other words, the ability to see yourself as changing and moving, as opposed to being fixed, that's something that comes with adulthood. In analyzing the stories that people told about themselves, the researchers found strong correlations between people's current lives and the stories they tell. Those with mood problems have many good memories, but the scenes are tainted by some dark detail. The pride of college graduation is spoiled when a friend makes a cutting remark. The wedding party was wonderful until the best man collapsed from drink. A note of disappointment closes each narrative phase. In other words, it's not just that something bad happened, but that's the resolution of the story. My wedding was wonderful, and then the guy got drunk. I had a wonderful graduation, and then my father said something to me. By contrast, generative adults, those who score highly on tests measuring civic-mindedness, who are likely to be energetic and involved and members of Sinai Temple, tend to see many of the events of their life in reverse order, linked by themes of redemption. They flunked sixth grade, but met a wonderful counselor and made honor roll in seventh. They were laid low by divorce, only to meet a wonderful new partner. Often, too, they say they felt singled out from early in life, protected, even while others suffered. And they gradually change over time in close tandem with meaningful events. In other words, their story doesn't say stable. The story they told themselves at 13 is different from the one they tell themselves at 20, the one they tell themselves at 40, depending on how their life changes. I bring this up, and I could read you more. It's an interesting story, and you can get it off the New York Times website. Just go to the Science Times. Because today we read the story of Ruth. And the story of Ruth perfectly reflects this arc of storytelling. After all, it's a terrible story. Awful things happen in the story of Ruth. Remember how it begins. Naomi has two sons, and those sons are married to two women, and at the beginning of the story, both of her sons die. And they're obviously young, and she has left a single woman alone, since her husband has already died, with two daughters-in-law, and no sons, and no prospects, and nothing to do. And it's not surprising that one of them, Orpah, says, look, you're a lovely person, but I've got to go make a life for myself. And she leaves. And Ruth makes what seemingly is a completely irrational choice. And you wonder what story she told herself about herself. What did she say to Naomi in those famous lines, right? Where you go, I will go. And she follows her, but ultimately, of course, the story turns out to be redemptive. And that's why it's such a beautiful story. Who would have thought from the very beginning of the story that at the very end, what's the last word of the story? David. In other words, this story is going to lead to the messianic line, going to lead to the kingship of Israel. And that idea, it seems to me, is critical to the survival of our people. Do you know what you're supposed to do on Passover? How the Haggadah is structured? Machil beginut umisayim b'shevach. You begin with shame, with trial, with difficulty, with suffering, with anguish, umisayim b'shevach, and you end with praise, with hope, and with redemption. In other words, the story that the Jewish people has chosen to tell itself, about itself, is a story of hope, is a story of possibility. And every suffering along the way gets incorporated into that story. There is a day that is supposed to encapsulate all the sufferings of the Jewish people, Tisha B'Av. And you know what the rabbis tell us? What day is the Messiah born? Tisha B'Av. Which is the ultimate statement of something terrible happened to me, but it will lead ultimately to something good. The way generative adults in this story manage to tell the stories of their lives, which is, I've gotten to a point that I can see that my sufferings led me here, which doesn't mean that I wanted them. It doesn't mean that every pain was good or every suffering was redemptive, but ultimately I can see my story in the arc of redemption. That same thing that people do in their own lives, the stories they tell themselves in order to thrive, that's what the Jewish people has done. And we've done it again and again and again. In the story of Ruth, in the story of the destruction of the temple, in the story of slavery, and even, ultimately in our own day, in the story of the Shoah. Because as terrible, as monumental, as cataclysmic as it is, we didn't stop telling our story. We didn't say it was good that it happened, but we did say, look at that, as terrible as it was, ultimately, what is the message of the Shoah? The ultimate message, the message now over 50 years later, we survived. We faced the greatest cataclysm in history that any people has ever faced, and we're here. We have a state. We have a people. We have influence and wealth and universities. A government. A language that was dead and has been revived. We didn't pack it up and go home. We didn't say, now that this has happened to us, we're through. Instead, we took even this horrendous event and encompassed it in the narrative of our people. And said that ultimately, we still have not given up on redemption. This is the Yizkor message. The message of Yizkor is that we all tell ourselves a story, and the people whom we've lost and the people whom we love, they're part of our story. And their loss is painful. And you'll notice that even here, The people who tell stories that are redemptive, they don't forget that they've lost. They don't pretend that the loss didn't happen. The difference between those who tell stories which cripple them and those who tell stories which enable them is those who are generative, those who succeed, those who flourish, those who thrive, those who grow. They don't end the story with the loss. They don't say, I had a beautiful wedding, but this happened. They say, I had a beautiful wedding, this happened, but it was a beautiful wedding. And that's the message of Yizkor. We don't end with Yizkor, because it's not the end of the story. And we acknowledge the pain, and we remember those we love, and we know that everything they have given us in the course of their lives is to enable us to continue our story. That their gifts to us are generative gifts, are gifts that allow us to grow. And that even though we rise in pain, matchil beginut, we begin with difficulty, we misayim b'sheva. We sit down knowing that what they gave us is more important ultimately to our story than the fact that they were taken from us. That what touches us is their lives, not their passing. Their passing is pain, but their lives are the message of our own growth. What was in the Science Times of the newspaper is in the DNA of our people. That's how we tell our story. And God knows if any people could have told its story such that it would stifle and cripple and end the possibility of hope and redemption, it is the Jewish people. But we never have. And we never will. Because faith means hope. And the belief that this world is superintended by something greater than this world means that all the loss and all the pain and all the difficulty point its way to something better. And so as we approach the Yizkor service, we remember that our pains and our sadness, they are not our story. They're part of our story. But as long as we keep telling not only of our pain but of our growth, not only of our sadness but of our possibility, then we will continue to be faithful to the message of the Book of Ruth, which begins with a painful loss and ends with Biyat HaMashiach, with the coming of the Messiah, with the day when death will be no more. Please rise for the Yizkor service.